Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Mages, Sages, Healers, and Seers, I am proud to bring you The Art of Healing with Dr. Pak Young, television producer, teacher, and prolific author. Greetings and welcome, Pak. How are you tonight?
Thank you, Hercules. I am great tonight and all filled with hope because our guest tonight has written a book called Channeled Messages of Hope. And it is a compilation of channeled conversation with 19 famous, although they are departed, souls. They discuss global warming and climate change and impart wisdom to us on the earth from their lofty places in the afterworld. Now, we all know that climate change is a weighty, somewhat depressing subject that has divided our nation. And at the center of this book is a woman channeler named Sam Larkin, who allows the essence of the souls on the spirit side to converse with the interviewer, Carolyn Thomas. Now, tonight we're going to hear some information from John Muir, Jacques Cousteau, Theodore Roosevelt, Wayne Dyer, Mohandas Gandhi, Albert Einstein, Nikola Tesla, John McCain, St. Francis of Assisi, and more. Now, you might be asking, why in the heck does this matter? Because every day we are being more drastically affected by the changes in our climate, which are manifested as weather, fire, floods, and the humongous loss of life. It must be addressed, and who better to help us than the geniuses who have passed on into spirit world? You might think that's a little far-fetched, but hang in there with me. Tonight, our guest, John Thomas, is Carolyn's husband and co-author, and he's going to tell us about this unconventional process and share the gems that can help to save our planet. Not an easy thing to do. Now, John himself was a bit of a fish out of water initially in this project because he's a tech guy who hails from Silicon Valley. With his chemical engineering degree, he was employed in tech fields of software, semiconductors, and advanced battery technologies, not real conducive to a whole spiritual connection with the other world. But that is exactly how John became involved in his wife's project, so that he could lead and help with the technical interviews that came from the technically minded souls in the afterlife. He also helped Carolyn with the others. So now, if you're intrigued, I know I am, you're going to love how this project came to be with all the twists and turns it took. So without further ado, please welcome John Thomas.
Jack, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me onto your show.
Oh, great, John. I'm so glad you were available and willing. Now, tell us a little bit about Sam, Carolyn, and...
Okay. Let me tell you how this whole project came about. First of all, Carolyn, she is not a channeler. She is the inspiration for this book and this project. And the roles in this are, Carolyn is the inspiration, really the primary author. She would research exhaustively as we were planning to talk with the various souls. And she would put together the frameworks for the interviews. The way we would actually contact the souls is actually through Sam. Sam is a channeler that Carolyn first got to know Sam many years back. And Sam is not a professional channeler. She doesn't do sessions for money and things like that. But what she realized early in her life is that she had animal communication skills. She started figuring out she could tell when animals were in distress, even as a child. And so what she ended up doing was helping people that she was close to with their animal communication issues. And Carolyn found out about Sam, and we were having some trouble with our cats in the household, and that's how they first made contact. They ended up becoming very close and becoming friends. So they would periodically, you know, work with our cats and do things like that. Now, what happened, though, and we're going back a few years now, is that Sam started getting what she termed high vibrational messages. She didn't know where or why, but it was clear to her that they were intended for Carolyn, and she told Carolyn about this. Now, keep in mind, Sam's been an animal communicator all this time, but what they decided to do is to see if they would be able to bring in wherever these messages were coming from. And so this was the first time they experimented with bringing in a soul from the other side through Sam. And what happened is when Sam reached out, this entity called Baba came through, and through Sam told Carolyn, yes, I have been, you know, working to get in contact with you. I have messages for you. And that's actually how the whole thing started. So this was a revelation, actually, for Carolyn and Sam that this could even happen. And I will mention also the nature of the channeling through Sam. Sam is what we would call a voice channeler. So when a soul comes into her, actually that soul temporarily takes over her vocal cords, her body, in a sense, and Carolyn can actually have a direct conversation with the soul through Sam. Sam, it's not classic what we have come to know is called intuitive channeling, where you tell the channeler who you would like to connect, the channeler connects, passes on your message, the soul passes a message to the channeler, they pass it back to you. That is not how this worked. When we were actually conversing, Carolyn primarily, myself, and I was involved in most of the interviews, we were actually having a conversation, a dialogue, right through Sam. And Sam would have no recollection, really, when the whole session was over. We'd have to tell her what happened. So it was quite unique. So to kind of make the long story short, after they made contact with this entity, and we'll call that entity Baba, Carolyn was thinking, wow, if we could connect with Baba, who we told Carolyn he's an ascended master on the other side, part of this group called the Council, which are very, I mean, I'll just use the word high-level, very evolved masters on the other side. Carolyn thought, I wonder if we could contact other souls on the other side through Sam. And so they did some experimenting with this, talking to souls like David Bowie and Robin Trower, and it worked. And I heard these conversations. I mean, they were just, you know, Carolyn was just laughing nonstop, the sense of humor of these souls in dialogue. And by the way, when they come through Sam, you're hearing them in their accents, which Sam is West Coast, just like we are, West Coast, USA. And all of a sudden you're hearing English accents, or when we talk to John Muir, Scottish accents, or Eastern European with Nikola Tesla. Anyway, we're able to contact these souls. So they did some of this work. Then Carolyn had another inspiration, and she thought, wow, if we can connect with souls like this, maybe we could connect with a variety of souls that could help impart messages of hope on all these issues that are facing our country, a divided country, a democracy at peril, environment, wars going on, Ukraine, etc. And so Carolyn decided through Sam that she wanted to contact Baba and run this inspiration by Baba. And the inspiration of how Carolyn came about it is in the introduction in the book. It's really, really interesting, I think. So they contacted Baba, came in, and Baba said, you know what, this is not, Carolyn, your inspiration. This is a project that this group of ascended masters, what we'll call the Council, described in the book. We have selected you to carry these messages of hope, and actually we want you to focus on the environment, because Mother Earth right now is struggling, and it's struggling as a result of man and the way man is treating the environment, which really is Mother Earth, who has a soul. And we want you to focus on the environment and impart messages of hope around that topic. And that is how the whole thing came about. I'll stop now, but the next part of the story is how did the list of souls that we talked to came through? That's another story.
Okay, so now All right. This is all just kind of, you know, a little odd for the ordinary person to understand that Carolyn was picked by a council of dead people to talk about climate change. Now, why do you call it Messages of Hope? I mean, this is a pretty dividing subject. It's got a lot of heat around it, and there's science versus spirituality here. So why is it hope?
Well, first of all, who are the readers that we're trying to appeal to? The readers of the book will be those that are spiritually open, spiritually curious, and probably feel despair about where our environment is going. If you're just a regular citizen here, and maybe you have children, and you're just one person, and you see where things are going, you hear all the horror stories, global warming, the ice caps melting, there's a lot of things to bring despair, or maybe even panic. Where is it all going? Is it hopeless? Well, it's not hopeless. And so what we were looking for is insight from the souls, and we could say, yes, are they dead? In their human body forms, they did die, but the soul lives on. The soul is on the other side. And there's a lot of material in the book about what these souls on the other side are doing, how they come back in a body. There's a lot of stuff like that. We can get into it on this interview. But we were looking to find the areas where we could, you know, provide messages of hope and give the common person some things that they actually could do that could make a difference so that you don't have to feel powerless. We can actually regain some power on the situation.
Okay, so you had a series of conversations now with people. Now, are they all on the council, or were they just, they all talked to each other on the other side? Apparently, they were all related. But are they all on the council?
From what we came to understand as a council, and keep in mind, we're not saying that we're spiritual or afterlife experts. We don't know. I mean, I guess we'll all find out, right? But from what we could surmise and what we were told by certain souls, no, not all of these souls are on the council. In fact, the majority are not. What we determine, and there's in the book this is discussed in more detail, but the council is ascended masters that will probably not be coming back in a body. What we came to understand, Baba would be one. St. Francis of Assisi would be one. There were other ones. I can tell you that the souls, the more and more interviews we did that are available for reading, and even on our website, there's verbal excerpts because we recorded everything. You can actually hear excerpts from some of these interviews on our website. You know, some of them were on the council. Many of them were not. Many of them had interactions with each other on the other side. Not all of them did. But we became better and better as we did more and more interviews on talking to the souls and asking them more probing and penetrating questions, not just about the environment, but about what the work they're doing on the other side, who they were interacting with, what their transition was like, what are they doing on the other side, and what are their plans for incarnation. Many of these things are... I found it very fascinating because, again, we're not experts here. We're not spiritual leaders. We're not Wayne Dyer and, you know, others like that. We're people down here trying to make a difference, and this was the path that we were given to try to do that.
Okay. Well, later on, I'm going to ask you the question, why do they care? But right now, I do want to talk about some of these sample recordings. You know, this isn't made up. I just want to say that. This isn't made up. This is real stuff. And I've listened to the recordings on your site. I've read your book, of course. I've done some research. And Sam Larkin's voice changes her speech pattern, her tone, her timbre, and her accent. It changes with each person that is coming through her and taking over her vocal cords. Now, wasn't this a little unnerving for both Sam and for Carolyn and you when this happened?
Well, when it first happened, and let's take John Muir, one of the very early interviews, all of a sudden Sam is talking with this Scottish accent. Carolyn and myself are like, what the heck is going on here? Now, Sam didn't know she was doing this. As mentioned, she really has no recollection of these interviews afterward. We let her listen to the recordings. We'd actually do these on Zoom. We were remote. She's an hour away from where we are. And she would listen to some of these things and was just as mystified, you know, as we were. And I can also mention that while when we went into an interview with a particular soul, Carolyn would do extensive research on that soul. So we knew how to, you know, create the framework for the interview and stuff like that. But we never shared any of that with Sam. In fact, all Sam would know is maybe the day before, Carolyn would say, hey, we want to do an interview, because we would set up, you know, every few weeks we do one, and Carolyn might say, we're going to talk to President Theodore Roosevelt, which Sam may or may not have known anything about. We would send a picture, and that was that. That was what Sam had to work with. No, she was not in on any of the research or any of that kind of thing. And many of these souls, she did not have really much personal knowledge of their history when they were in the body in the particular lifetime that we were interested in.
So when Carolyn originally talked to David Bowie, did she say, what are you working on? Can you hum a few bars of your next song?
I don't know if she said hum a few bars of your next song, but she did go into things like, what are you doing on the other side, and what other souls, you know, did we have past lifetimes together? What were those like? You know, she would go in. David Bowie is not on the list of interviews. That was just one that they connected with because there was a particular affinity. David Bowie has quite the sense of humor. I will just say that. It might not all be appropriate for general recording and distribution.
Okay. Next time, definitely ask for some music.
Oh, maybe the next. Maybe the next book will have to take a different tack.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, John Lennon, ask him, you know, what his next song is too. Anyway, I digress. Okay, so now you all were chosen. I mean, you were there, the tech guy, and all of a sudden you hear your wife talking to David Bowie. I'm sure it got you from one room to the other. And then you sat down and thought, you know, I could be part of this. I could ask some of the technical questions. Okay. Why do you think you guys, the three of you, were chosen?
Yeah, that's a real big question, isn't it? So in Carolyn's case, Carolyn and Baba being an ascended master on the council, it turns out they had lifetimes in the past. So there was some connection there. Now, I was told, actually, even myself, I'm just this guy in Silicon Valley trying to run a startup and keep out of trouble, that even I had some past lifetime interaction that may have intersected, you know, with Baba. Why were we actually selected, though? Because we're just people down here trying to live our life, okay? But clearly, Carolyn has been very spiritually attuned over time, and I follow right with her. Just that in and of itself is maybe not the reason, but for whatever reason, she was selected to be the messenger for this. And I will tell you that maybe 10 years ago, you know, we have various, let's call them spiritual counselors or people that have some channeling ability, people we trust that we've had connection with for a long time. But 10 years ago, Carolyn was speaking with one of these people that both her and I occasionally have a session with. And she was told 10 years ago, mind you, you're going to write a book. Carolyn's never written a book, and she's not an author. And when she told me that 10 years ago, we both like, write a book? Are they nuts? Where did that come from? You know? And then here we are with Channel Messages of Hope is published, and Carolyn wrote it. And that's always stuck with me. So why were we selected? I don't know. I can't tell you exactly why. But we were, and for Carolyn, she knows that this is her life mission. And what we've come to understand is when we come into this lifetime, there are certain things that maybe our souls decided we would work on in this lifetime, or maybe there's contracts with other souls built through previous lifetimes. There's sometimes some things at a level we don't know that we would never really know as just humans in a body. And I believe that this project was something that her soul and others had determined as something that she needed to do. We call it a contract. Maybe there's other words for it, but it is truly, and she feels it, it's her mission to do this, to come up with this channeled Messages of Hope series and see if she can, impart some good to humanity in these times.
Well, Carolyn Mace's book, Sacred Contracts, talks about this, how we all make contracts before we come into this incarnation and our life. So it's possible that you guys did enter into an agreement to not only incarnate with each other, but also to come in and do this work. Okay, so did these souls decide to come in, or did you and Carolyn decide who you wanted to contact and you went after them?
Combination. The first souls that Carolyn decided she wanted to talk to, John Muir is a very obvious choice. He's a noted conservationist. He's well known for what he did in the Sierra. So she made her kind of list. I will call it the pro forma list. And we didn't have them all. She didn't have them all. But what happened is, as we started talking to souls, we learned that we always want to ask the soul at the end of the interview, who else should we be talking to? So the souls would lead us in the direction of who else to talk to. This may seem obvious, but John Muir said you need to talk to Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt, he accomplished a lot in what was really kind of a short lifetime, but we can really thank a lot of our national park system on Theodore Roosevelt. And John Muir had early interactions with Theodore Roosevelt. I mean, imagine taking the president off on a 4-day backpacking trip, into the Sierras, into Yosemite. I don't know where Secret Service was hanging out during this time, but,
they were in the bar.
Probably.
Yeah.
So anyway, then you could say, Albert Einstein. Well, there's an obvious one. He's an inventor. He worked on things like nuclear and stuff like that. Albert Einstein asked us to talk to Mileva Einstein. Mileva Einstein, we didn't actually know anything about Mileva Einstein. Well, that was his wife. They actually divorced, but that was his wife when he was in
his
a body.
First wife, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And there were specific reasons he wanted us to talk to Mileva, and a lot of it had to do with what he was working on the other side as he, as we understand, you go to the other side, there's a review of your life, lessons that maybe you learned, lessons you need to learn, et cetera. And so there's a whole story about why Albert wanted us to talk with Mileva. I found it quite compelling.
Well, he was very impressed with her. I just happened to know a lot about their lives together, and she was almost in some areas smarter than he was on a lot of subjects. You also state in your book that Mother Earth has a soul, and that we have hurt her by exploiting without replenishing, without sharing her work, and we've also exploited people in the process. Now, do you think that climate change, what we're going through right now, is our punishment for these past deeds?
Punishment. It's probably not my place to judge what is punishment and what is not, but as explained to us, St. Francis and others, the earth is reflecting the way man is treating each other and the earth. We're in great discord. There's a lot of disharmony. Earth is reacting to that. Man is not treating each other well, as was explained to us. Man is not really treating the earth well. And as part of this whole thing, I got a lot better educated on what is actually going on with climate, because there's this point of view, the earth is a soul and the earth is angry because we're not treating her well. But what is actually being manifested in what we're seeing in terms of, more extreme weather? What is really going on there? Well, I found out, because my first thing is, how do you explain to climate deniers what's going on when people say, oh, it's just weather? There needs to be a technical answer. We can't just say the earth is seeing how man is treating each other and the earth is upset. That doesn't really do a good job with climate deniers about what's going on. But we know what's going on with the earth around climate right now. At the high level, at the soul level, at a spiritual level, the earth is angry. There's no doubt about it. And we're seeing a reaction there. But I can go into a little more detail on how that's manifesting if you would like.
Yeah, a little bit later, because I think, the reaction is weather, but it's weather as consequence from previous action. So that's all part of the cycle. But we'll talk about what we want to talk about a little bit later, because that's a great subject. Okay, so now you have said that we on Earth have to ask the ones that have passed for help. If we don't ask for help, it won't be given to us and it won't happen. Now talk to me about that phenomenon.
Well, it's actually maybe a little bit in the middle. What you're alluding to now is the concept of guides. So our understanding now, and after talking to the souls, is that souls on the other side can be guides for us here on Earth. If there's a vibrational match, the souls are available to try to influence us, to try to steer us, to try to guide us. And, you know, from what we understand now, souls, or let's say a higher self, because we come back, we have many lifetimes, but there's a soul, there's a higher self that persists on this. For a particular lifetime, oftentimes the higher self soul on the other side will ask other souls to be a guide for this particular lifetime. That's one mechanism. And if there's a vibrational match there, then that probably can happen. I think all of us probably have many guides we don't even know about. But the other side of this is if we're here in a lifetime and there's a particular soul that had a lifetime that inspires us, maybe you're a scientist or an inventor and you have great admiration for Nikola Tesla, possibly, you can ask Nikola Tesla in your meditations to please be a guide for me. And again, if the vibrational match is there, the souls tell us they will absolutely be a guide. And there's no limit. It's not like, you know, a soul can only be a guide for 1,000 people in a body. It's not like that. It's unlimited. There's infinite capacity. And I know, Carolyn and myself both know that Wayne Dyer, for example, is a guide for us. Theodore Roosevelt is a guide for us. We asked him, and he said he would be delighted. And the guides interact with us, you know, how do they influence us? And as they explain, and we talked to multiple souls about this, when you have, let's say, they come through in dreams is quite a typical thing, or when you have an aha moment, or maybe when Carolyn was in the shower and she had this inspiration about talking to souls through Sam and maybe doing messages of hope, oh, she was being guided on that. These aha moments, there's inspirations. There's multiple ways we found that this can happen. But the thing I really love is that these souls, if you have ones that inspire you, if there's a match there, if you want them to be, you know, your guide, you simply can ask them and they won't turn you down. They will not.
Well, and I understand that one of the ways that you, that souls have to lower their vibration in order to connect with us, which means then that we need to raise our vibrations to a level that it makes it easier for them to connect with us. So they're being, you know, your mind is preoccupied, you're in the shower, you're maybe singing a song, you're doing something, all of a sudden your conscious mind isn't working, and boom, there comes the inspiration, because that's when your vibration is really open to getting something else in. And I think that the more we do, I'll use the word relax, and just contemplate connection with the others, maybe that's the frequency that will allow them to come in and really be affected in our lives.
I would agree with you on that. I mean, if you're in a point, let's say you're meditating and you're in a point of, let's say, peace and calm, you're very open in that moment. But also if you're, I mean, back to the story of Carolyn in the shower, clearly she was thinking about this idea. Her passion for the idea was building. Her vibration, I know, was increasing in that moment. And the inspiration of what she could do with this newfound ability to communicate with souls through Sam came to her. But yeah, her vibration, I agree with you. I mean, the higher we can raise our vibration, it's going to be better for us in all aspects of our life. Easier said than done sometimes, I realize. But yeah, I think you're going to be much more open to having these kinds of inspirations and these communications when you are at a higher vibrational state. And we have control over that.
You also said in your book, your marvelous, marvelous book, I might add, that these souls have jobs on the other side. Samuel Clemens, for example, greets all of those people who cross over due to a gun violence incident. Now, why do you think that is?
Why does Samuel Clemens greet gun violence? This, I cannot answer that one. I do not know. But other ones are easier to explain. For example, John McCain is a guide for those, you know, in his lifetime, he was a great defender of the democracy. So he tries to inspire and guide those that have that same interest. G.W. Bush, President 41, he lost a child, very young child in his life. And so when people go through that just gut-wrenching, I mean, you can imagine a parent that has lost a child, he reaches out to those types and he greets them when they come over in the transition as well. So it just happens to depend, I think, on the interests or, you know, whatever that passion is, maybe the common vibration of people that really appreciate nature, the kind of, you know, John Muir will connect with people like that. People can connect with John Muir as well. It can be a two-way street on that. So it doesn't all, I mean, I can't say there's a super logical reason why they all choose this, but they definitely have interests and they have collaborations with other souls on the other sides around things like this. For example, John Muir is part of, I forget what he put it. It's like a group of souls that are very interested in nature and in preservation and the harmony of nature. And so he has souls with common interests like that. So I don't know. It's fascinating. I'm not in a hurry to learn more about it, but when I get there, I'm very interested to see a lot more about this.
Yes. Well, hopefully you will continue to connect when you go to the other side and download some more information. Now, here's a big question. So these geniuses, these amazing people, these big names that you've been contacting, why don't they reincarnate and come back to Earth and put their thoughts and their know-how and their brain power to work and save the gosh darn planet?
Well, they do reincarnate, and they're, you know, here's our understanding. You live a lifetime. You're here on this lifetime to try to learn and to grow. You have passions around things. When you go to the other side, there's a review process of what happened in that lifetime. There may be things you didn't fully work through, and there may be another lifetime where you need to come back and work through that. Let's take an example like Rachel Carson. You know, she wrote the book, The Silent Spring. At her peril, she brought great awareness to the role of pesticides and the damage to the environment, which, you know, big companies didn't like that. But her life ended in a body through cancer. It really ravaged her. And so when she went to the other side, what she told us is she's looking forward to coming back in a body to work, I don't know, maybe in the medical field or research or something to try to, you know, work on this cancer situation that was just so, you know, difficult for her when she was in a body. That's her thing, you know. But then you can go and you might take another one like, let's take Ronald Reagan. We interviewed him because we were actually very interested because you had such a record of environmentalists when you were governor, but then when you were president, it didn't seem so much. So we wanted to know more about that. But what he told us is the thing in his lifetime is he felt he was not putting out an authentic persona. He was always kind of hiding behind a facade. So when you look at it, you go, well, you know, it kind of makes sense. He was an actor, then he was the president, a very powerful guy. When he comes back in a body, his mission is going to be putting out an authentic self. It's not about saving the environment or anything else. It's about it's about lessons he needs to work through in the next body. And there's many examples like this in the book with the different souls. So why don't they all come back just to focus on this? They all come back for different reasons to do different things. But I'll tell you what, they are guiding many people that are working on technologies that can help our environment right now. There's a lot of activity like that going on the other side. When they come back in a body, will they be working on that? I don't know. It depends on you know, the lessons that they feel they still need to work through and what is remaining for them in their soul progression, is our understanding.
Now, you also say that on the other side, there is no fear. There is only love. So how do we know that? And is love the only thing on the other side?
What we got from all of these different interviews and talking to the different souls, it's all about energy and love. And it was really made clear to us that the transition, there is nothing to fear in the transition. People have fear of dying. It's very common, obviously. That transition, you enter into this environment where it is fully accepting. It's all love. And I can tell you this, this really struck me. In all of these soul interviews, I could not detect ego at all. At all. You know, there's no, they had personalities, yes. They had sense of humor, yes. But there was not an ego about, you know, me. It was all about, you know, the love and what they could do to help others. They were all very forthright with us, especially on maybe mistakes and things in their lifetime. In the lifetime that we were talking to them, of interest and things that they had to learn as they came back, maybe in their next incarnation. It was fascinating, but there's examples in the book of what the transition was like, and it was different for different people. Like Wayne Dyer, he said that when he transitioned, and there's this period where you go from you're in a body and you kind of, you know, wake up, I guess I'll use that term, you're on the other side. It can be a little disorienting, as it was explained to us. But he said it looked, to him, it looked just like Maui, because in his mind, that's where he lived. Maui was kind of heaven on earth from his point of view. When
Sure.
You know, and there's other examples like that. I found them just very fascinating, really. So I think for readers that are interested in that kind of thing, there's a lot of content for them.
Well, and I also want to add here, your book is not political in nature. It's more of a spiritual journey. It's a very sweet and gentle book because the souls came through in that kind of an approach. They weren't hostile. They weren't angry. They weren't demanding. I think they were just communicating these ideas and these comments. And I think it's absolutely, I think it should be mandatorily read in schools by everyone. But, you know, that's my approach. Now, talk to us, John, a little bit about the polar ice caps and the seaweed and the kelp that helps with the oxygen and the carbon on our planet. Let's talk about some of the problems and the solutions that we really need to get on today.
Okay. I will summarize that situation, but first I'll make a statement that you're right, Kat. This is not a political book at all. We do talk to politicians, and the reason we did that is because we wanted to talk with those that made policy. That was our main emphasis. And, you know, coincidentally, a lot of the ones, policymakers, you could say, well, those are Republicans. You know, it just so happened that, you know, the Republican, Democrat, we don't care. It's not a political book. But these policymakers were definitely involved in environmental things. I mean, I'll say this before I get to your question, that Richard Nixon, in his State of the Union in 1970, he was way ahead of the game. This stunned us. Carolyn found this in her research. You know, he was talking about reparations to Mother Earth, you know, for the damage we had done for clean water. It was really interesting. But let me just tell you,
I worked for the guy who was Nixon's television consultant, and our office was basically, I fielded a lot of calls from John Haldeman, from Ehrlichman, from all those people, because this guy, Mark Good was his name, had to fly out and go handle things every time Nixon went on TV because of the disastrous debate he'd had with Kennedy. So I know a lot about Nixon, and you're absolutely right. I mean, he's infamous for his resignation in the Watergate situation that John Dean had everything to do with, but he also had policies of the heart that were amazing that I knew about because I was somewhat involved, you know, distanced by 2 degrees from his from his inner circle. So yes, that interview really, really touched me.
Yeah, it was fascinating. I mean, Carolyn was terrified. She didn't know if Nixon would come through because Stephen Schneider, who was, you know, he was an advisor, you know, to USA leaders, said, oh, Nixon's in deep isolation right now. I don't know if he's going to come out. This is the review process.
Yeah.
You know, but he did. He came through. It was not instant. And I think, you know, we are not Nixon apologists, again, not a political book, but we were just really interested in the fact he was ahead of the game on this. And we also know that his legacy is Watergate. So I don't know if this is true, but I think the fact when he came through, as you can read, he was like, are you sure you want to be talking to me? And actually we were. And I think when the point was made about why Carolyn wanted to talk with him, I'm hoping that maybe that helped in his healing. I have no idea. But it made us feel better. You know, when you can acknowledge someone, they have this legacy of this bad stuff. But when they've also done good things, people need to be acknowledged, you know, on both sides of that, at least in our humble opinion. So anyway.
Well, I'm sure you did, John, because Nixon was a very insecure guy, which is why he did all this bravado, and he had a huge drinking problem. So he was definitely covering up a lot of things, and you probably helped him a great deal.
I hope so. But do you want to go into the environmental aspect now? Maybe I can.
I do.
Okay. So if I can summarize this, but first of all, if we just envision our environment, we have our atmosphere, we have the ice caps, we have oceans, and we have land. Now, for Earth, for our environment to function well, and first of all, I considered what the Earth has given us as mankind, as nature, a great gift, given us this environment that we can live in, that we should revere that and take care of it. That's a little bit different. We can get into that later. But the Earth is something that survives by being in balance. It's almost like us in our human body. I mean, you know that, like, if you have one of those days, maybe you just don't eat bad or you don't sleep well or something, you're not out of balance and you don't feel good. It takes a while to recenter. You know, the Earth is sort of the same thing. And the Earth goes through a cycle, what we'll call from greenhouse to ice house. This is a lot what, you know, climate deniers say, well, it's just weather. It's true. The Earth goes through a greenhouse to ice house cycle, but that cycle is 100,000 years. So as the Earth is going through that cycle, there is time to maintain and rebalance through the cycle. Now, it's the Earth to stay in balance and for mankind to live. You know, if we had no atmosphere here and we were just exposed directly to space is sub-zero temperature, we couldn't survive. The atmosphere is there to capture warmth and keep the proper environment. But the Earth is a balance of things cool down at night and then they heat up during the day. And the oceans are there to absorb a lot of the heat during the day. Well, you know, people talk a lot about greenhouse gas. There needs to be some level of greenhouse gas in the atmosphere. Otherwise, we could not trap heat and maintain the environment. But what has happened now is because in the last, considering a 100,000-year cycle, in the industrial age, the last 150 years, our man-made emissions of greenhouse gases has taken the greenhouse gas content in the atmosphere way above what it needs to be. So what's happening is it's trapping a lot more heat now because the greenhouse gas concentration is much higher. And Dr. Charles Keeling is the guy that first came across the fact that CO2, which is a greenhouse gas, there are others, he was the one that identified the concentration's getting higher, and it's getting higher really fast compared when you look at history. So now we're trapping more heat. And so the oceans need to absorb more heat to keep the balance. But because we're trapping more heat now and it's going up so fast, it's eroding the ice caps. And the ice caps are a prime cold sink. We need the ice caps and the oceans to be able to absorb heat so that we can maintain the balance. So we are out of balance from the heat balance point of view. At the same time, back to your point about seaweed, you know, we have more greenhouse gas going into the atmosphere, which traps more heat. Now, one of the ways that Earth maintains the balance of greenhouse gases is photosynthesis. So trees, seaweed, all of these things consume CO2 in photosynthesis. This was a natural way of trying to maintain balance in greenhouse gas. But, you know, as we do things like, let's say in Brazil, the rainforest get chopped away, the Amazon rainforest, that was a huge necessary thing there for, you know, dealing with greenhouse gas. As the oceans become more acidic because we have more CO2 in the atmosphere, which is starting to kill seaweed and also bleach out coral, which are prime food sources for the fish. All of these things I'm talking about are skewing the balance, and Earth simply cannot react fast enough to maintain the balance. That's what's really going on. And that's why if you simply say, well, this is the weather, you're seeing weather as a consequence, as you mentioned, Kat, but it's because man is pushing that balance so far to the side, Earth is not able through natural means to maintain that balance. And so what we're seeing, I think John Muir said this, you know, we're like, you know, drought in the West and we're drenching the East. We're seeing extremes of weather. It's starting to happen. I mean, you can see it in the hurricane season is extending out here where we live in the Western USA. Wildfires are a big problem and the season for those is extending. So a lot of the things that man can do is all about giving the Earth the means to try to recapture balance. That's why the greenhouse emissions are so important. That's why work that is being done to deacidify the oceans is so important. There's many things that are going on which are actually good and they're being done in the right direction. But I just wanted to give you an overview of what is the situation with this weather as a consequence and the out of balance, of our environment is the point I really wanted to make.
Well, John McCain in your book said that he's concerned that Republicans specifically are not paying attention to the science when it comes to this truth about the Earth being out of balance because of the industrial age and how fast it went without consideration for the consequences. So, John, what was the most surprising thing you learned during this process?
Oh, the most surprising thing. Well, there's surprise, and then it's like, where was my awareness raised that I didn't expect it would be raised? And, you know, we talked to the policymakers and the conservationists, technologists, and the spiritual leaders. What really made it make, I guess, a lot more sense and clear to me was, you know, really what the point St. Francis made is that this may seem like a very simple point. Maybe some people might say it's a little trite, but St. Francis emphasized, we are all one. Man does not hold himself up here and everything is below man. Man, you know, humanity, the animals, you know, nature, the oceans, all these are living things and we are all connected. And, you know, Earth is reacting to basically feeling disrespected is how it was termed to us. So John Muir said it well. He said, you know, if we treated our Earth or our environment like the way we would treat a church, you know, that kind of respect, we'd be well ahead of the game. And I think the fact that we are all one, we are all connected, and we all have consequence for each other, and just doing, you know, then it comes down to, well, you know, the Earth is out of balance. It looks like it's really, you know, going to a bad place. What can I do? There's many things we can do. If you first of all simply have that knowledge that we are one, have that common level of respect, we see Earth as a partner in our life, not just something we take for granted here. We revere Earth. We thank Earth and nature, these things. We'll have a different attitude probably in the way we treat each other too. This is a good start. And that made me feel good. You know, there is just something like that. More tactically, we could say, live within your means. You don't have to have excessive consumption. Look what happened during the pandemic. The air above Beijing cleaned up in the pandemic when life slowed down. I know it's not something sustainable to do what we did during the pandemic, but it was evidence that when we change what we do as humanity, the Earth can react very quickly. The Earth wants to react. The Earth wants to get back in balance. And Kat, the way I look at it is like, what if, and I say this, you know, on interviews like this, what if for a month everyone on this Earth said, I will not litter, and if I see a piece of litter, I will pick it up. What if we just did that? I can tell you, I'm convinced things like that would make a big difference. So I don't pass by a small piece of litter on the ground anymore, because whatever I do, I think, you said that, John, pick it up, you know? So I do, and it's just my point of view.
So what was the scariest thing you learned from all these people?
Oh, the scariest thing. Well, I don't know if you might term this scary, but, you know, Nikola Tesla, prolific inventor, one of his real core inventions was the ability to transmit energy wirelessly. If you could transmit energy just through the air, you know, let's say you didn't need power lines, that would obviously be a game changer. But when Nikola Tesla died, and he had many thousands of pages of his inventions that just disappeared, where did the Tesla papers go? That's always a big question. And he told us that the government of Serbia and the USA swooped in quickly at his death and took all of those papers. He used to live in the Waldorf Astoria in New York. They took those away because there was great fear that if this wireless technology got in the hands, it could create weapons of war. That's kind of a scary thought, you know. And that technology has never come to fruition, but you can imagine if you could direct, you know, a bolt at something wirelessly, you could just take out targets at will. It would be that's unnerving, to say the least. So that's an example.
Well, now, what was the nicest? I mean, we've heard the St. Francis of Assisi, we are all one and we mean it, you know, all the way from the top to the bottom, from the in, the out. But what was the nicest thing that you heard or learned?
I would say the nicest thing is that, you know, when we transition, it is a purely love environment. And you say, well, what does that really mean? I had a dream one time where I was convinced I was given a glimpse of what that felt like, and it was the warmest, most comfortable, accepting feel. I mean, this is a dream. It was probably 5 years ago. I carry it with me. It was just, it was like, this transition is not something to fear, and there's souls that will greet you and there for you, and that's a very comforting feeling to know that in this progression of life that we don't have to fear that part of it. You know, it's also made me kind of aware, Kat, that, you know, when it's clear now that, you know, we're put on this earth to learn, to grow, to learn lessons. I'm very aware now, you know, I will look at my own life of now I see, you know, people might say, wow, this happens to me over and over. I just don't get it. There's a lesson for us in our lives. We can choose to learn it and work through it, or we can ignore it and maybe we have to come back and learn it again. But I'm very aware now. I mean, I see now what I don't know all of them, but I know some of the life lessons I see in my life now. There's been recurring things that I've had, like, you do the same thing, you get the same result, and it's like, oh, there's a different way to do it, you know. So I rambled a little bit there, but that was probably a real nice realization for me.
Yeah, that's lovely. Well, I just want everybody to know again that the book is called Channeled Messages of Hope, Conversations with History's Most Prominent Souls on the Other Side on Global Warming and Climate Change. And it reads like a who's who of the world, people from the past who've gone to the other side and still have more to say. I highly recommend the book. It is moving. It is exciting. It is challenging. And it's really, really fun. So, John, you are currently involved as a CEO of a startup developing highly sustainable technologies in the food and agricultural industries. So I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about that in the next minute.
Yeah, so what I do here is it's a technology startup that I started this before any idea this book was going to come along, but it's taking things, for example, in culinary and agriculture, there's high reliance on refrigeration. Refrigeration's a big greenhouse gas emitter. And so what we've done is we brought transformational technology in for food and ag that allows things, there's things you have to do today. You have to cool down food quickly for food safety, things like that. We've got a different technique and a way to do it. And, we're getting started here. So that's very interesting, and it makes me feel good. One of the real reasons I want to do this is because I believe in the sustainability aspect of this. And then when Carolyn came up with the idea for Channel Messages of Hope, it was just such a natural to work on. And what I really hope is that, if I might make one point, for the readers of this book. We oftentimes worry about, if you have children, what kind of world are we leaving to the children, Well, there's another perspective I have too. What kind of world, I'm sure I will incarnate, I have more to learn. What kind of world do I want to come back to? Am I going to come back to later? It's a little bit there. I hadn't had that perception before. But, for people that do have kids, they're worried about the state of this earth even after they're gone. Channel Messages of Hope gives you, a lot of, there's many things that are going on positively. Yes, we're in a tough spot right now. But one thing I was very heartened to hear is that the younger generation, they really get it. There's many people, many different startups like mine, big companies that are working on things that will improve our environment. And that was certainly a message of hope. There's a lot of work to be done, but there's a lot of people aware and working on it. And if all of us do our part in this, we're aware of it, we can make a difference.
Okay, everybody, the book is Channeled Messages of Hope. The website is of the same name. Go to it, listen to the conversations, get converted, and get on the bandwagon to turn this around, and let's start today. John, you have the last 30 seconds to wind it up. First of all, my deepest gratitude to you for being on this show and for all the good work you're doing for all of our futures. What would you like to say to everybody as your last word, John?
I think as a parting word, as I mentioned before, on the channelmessagesofhope.com website, there are audio excerpts. I think the readers might find very interesting. There's a lot in the book, many, things about transitioning and what's going on the other side, as well as their impressions of the things that are coming that will help our environment. And, Carolyn is working on another book, maybe next year, will be Channel Messages of Hope around other topics. She's putting that together right now. So we really are here to get in front of those readers that are spiritually open, care about our environment for this book, and, want to know what they can do and what is being done. And so our website can lead you in that direction. And I really appreciate the time, Kat. It's been a pleasure.
Well, you're very welcome. And please ask Carolyn to contact John Lennon and ask him to write us another Imagine. We need one. Tell those rock and rollers to get back on the keyboards and give us some more music to help us through our lives.
I'm going to pass that on immediately.
All right. Well, thank you for your time. And Hercules, thank you again for the privilege of this hour. I always appreciate it. And good night and God bless to everybody who tuned in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.